you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. S&P futures up 11, NASDAQ futures up 68. After the huge comeback yesterday, at one point we had turned around like 700 points, 650 in the NASDAQ. Boy, oh boy, tell you what, if Trump's not trading it, people around him sure better be. Most of either that or they're the dumbest men on earth, or the most honest, which I don't think they are. Do we have Professor Carl?
Oh, you do. Come on, man. Chief, when have you ever complained about the market going up?
I like it to go up because the idea that it gets up too much and it ends up going down, it ends up people lose more on the way down than the way up. So I don't want it to go up when it shouldn't.
Well, that's usually the way it works because the market has this way of going up on a staircase and then it goes down out the window.
Yep.
I mean, that's normally, you know, what happens anyway. Here's the thing that I find so fascinating about this. So we had, you know, Iran was about to nuke Tel Aviv. This was the ostensible reason that we started this war. Okay.
According to Netanyahu, I believe about as much as my dog.
I didn't say it was true. I said ostensibly. Okay. Ostensibly, the reason that this war was started was that Iran was about to nuke Tel Aviv. By the way, Iran's been about to nuke Tel Aviv for at least half of my adult life.
Yep.
Okay. Incidentally, our original sin in this regard was, you know, in the 1950s and 1960s when we decided that the most important thing in the world was for us to prevent the democratically elected Iranian government from confiscating the assets of British Petroleum.
1953 or 4, yeah.
Yes. We decided that it wasn't even one of our country's firm's assets that were confiscated. It was BP's assets that were confiscated. And by the way, they were confiscated.
But our guys were recoiled in horror that maybe could happen to them.
Well, gee.
Yeah.
You know.
This is under everybody's hero, Ike. Right?
Well, and by the way, just to add a little more spice to that comment, last time I checked, the democratic process frequently confiscates people's assets, like right here in the United States. They're called taxes.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, yeah, okay. So, and incidentally, we have various entities, including Washington and California, now talking about wealth taxes, which are essentially what the Iranian government did back in the 1950s. We'll just take your assets because we feel like it. We won an election, therefore we're going to do that. Isn't the double standard just delicious? You know.
Well, it is. But the
it is
the whole thing about a wealth tax is first of all the idea of such a thing, you know, appalls me. Except sometimes. You know what? I used to be a simple guy until I started talking to all you guys. And now I all of a sudden read all the detail and all this stuff.
Right.
And I kind of understand where this sort of comes from.
Yeah.
For those that don't know and think it's probably a great idea, I mean, you know, if you look at, you know, we talked a long time yesterday with Nancy and John Flanagan and John Lee yesterday regarding people cannot gain anywhere just by earning money. The inflation is running ahead of their ability to just earn by a regular job.
Well, yeah.
And I'm not talking about a high-end law firm that charges people, you know, $1,000 an hour or some crap they can't pay, that kind of thing. I'm talking about regular people. And but yet you have this massive wealth bubble. So just like the guy who said, why do you rob banks? That's where the money is. Why are you going to tax wealth? Because that's where the dough is. And we have a tax or a non-tax in this country that said if your pops bought IBM at $5 and IBM is now $2.53 and he croaks and hands it to you, your basis is now $2.53.
So right.
So now you are insanely wealthy. I'm not saying he's got 10 shares, but if you got, you know, any kind of shares, you're insanely wealthy, and nobody will ever pay anything on that. Not like the poor schlump who goes to work every day, makes $20 an hour and has to fork over $5, you know, type
well,
of thing.
Well, you know, and by the way, that sort of thing, for those people that are into various sorts of estate planning, I have an associate of mine who's actually a very good friend, who his parents set up a gift trust with a lockdown until he reached a certain age, right? So they croak. This thing sits in what amount to index funds for quite a period of time. That's when the basis shifted, was when they croaked, of course, right? Now he gets a gift trust, and he's got these positions that where he is today, I wouldn't want them, okay? But of course, you know, it's not me. It's his decision what he does with it. However, he can't get into something more conservative without paying the accrued tax, because oh, by the way, the basis is like, you know, way back, you know, 10, 15 years ago, which he's not, you know, he's looking at going, excuse me, you're telling me what? If I sell this and go into, you know, say short-term treasuries where I have just a coupon that I'm clipping every month, all of a sudden I got to pay the government, you know, this many tens of thousands of dollars.
Look at
yes, you do.
Look at your girlfriend wannabe, the lady who's
my girlfriend wannabe. Why do I think you're about to insult me?
No. This would be a good catch on your part. One of the Vegas places. I don't know if it's Sands or one of them. Whatever the guy owned it. I think he just croaked not too long ago, and he left all the dough with stepped up basis, I assume. I'm not their tax attorney. To the daughter, who then went and sold it and bought Mark Cuban's team, right?
Oh, all right.
So once you start reaching that level of wealth, it's totally play money. Nobody ever gets any of this.
Oh yeah. No, there's all kinds of.
So you wonder why somebody might say, well, that's maybe where I ought to tax. That's where the money is. I can only get so much more out of the guy making $45,000 a year.
Well, one of my serious complaints about the way that things are structured today, and one of the things that makes me chuckle whenever anybody, you know, bitches about this, is every year, you know, everyone screams about this perspective of, well, you know, you can't tax people on unrealized gains. Oh, really? I've paid them every year of my adult life. And so have you.
Yeah, well, I did, because I was a market maker. I was a professional trader.
Well, no. You pay it every single adult in America pays them, okay, whether they pay them directly or indirectly. If you own a home, you pay tax on unrealized gains every year in the form of property taxes.
Well, you don't own stock or bonds.
No. Well, unless you're a professional trader, and then you're marked to market. Right. But on December 31st. But you do... And oh, by the way, for most Americans, their residence is their largest asset, their largest fixed asset.
Well, but that's your valuation on your local property tax. It's still no income tax.
Well, wait a minute. Oh, I'm sorry. My house, because of so-called market forces, went from $250,000 to $500,000. My property taxes doubled, but I didn't get any of the money.
Well, I understand that, but I'm saying it's still not... You haven't to pay on the $250.
Point is, Chief, it's a tax on unrealized
gains. I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying it's not a federal income tax on unrealized gains. It's a property tax on increased valuation. But you know what the thing of it is, though? I guess in the immortal words of one of my tax accountant buddies, it doesn't matter. They need the money. If the price of the house hadn't gone up, they just would have doubled the multiplier.
Well, the millage is in many cases the millage is actually capped statutorily. So at a certain point they can't do that.
If they want the dole, they find a way.
Right. I mean, you know, one of the ways that they get around this is those damnable school bonds. One of the reasons I like living in Tennessee, one of the reasons I moved here, in fact, is that
I thought it was because you'd be the only guy who has teeth.
That could be part of it.
Just kidding.
Well, there's the old thing about Kentucky and that, you know, screw your sister, right?
God.
Well, by the way, it's Ken F. me.
Well, it's sort of family show with something foreplay, you awake, sis?
Well, yeah, something like that, right? But one of the things that is unique, I don't know if it's entirely unique in Tennessee among other states, but it's quite unique, is that the school system funding in Tennessee is actually done at the state level. It's not from the county level. And this in turn means that the county doesn't get to play games with, you know, your property tax having, you know, 18 lines on it. The biggest one, by the way, happens to be your schools.
Oh yeah.
And, by the way, whenever they want something new, what they do is they wait until there's an off-cycle election year, like a primary election, and they stick the bond issue there where there's only going to be 15 people that show up that actually vote. And if it fails, they'll find a way to get it back in front of you 6 months later when, you know, the people who, oh, you SOBs, that's going to raise by, you know, will not show up. And therefore, and incidentally, nobody ever takes those school board members out behind the outhouse and applies a little corrective logic to their heads. So it never ceases to it. Yeah, you know, I was always amazed by the garbage that went on when I lived in Florida, which is supposedly, you know, the reddest of the red states, right? And yet, you know, I showed up at some of the public meetings. It doesn't have anything to do with the fact that I had to do accounting for a corporation,
because
I was the CEO. Well, and I asked them, I said, you know, you have this bond issue you want to pass, which, of course, is going to impact property taxes. Excuse me, but tell me why you didn't have a sinking fund for those roofs and chillers, and instead you were buying Wii game machines for the high school.
Our buddy Russell was on the board, and he ended up resigning and taking his kid out of school because he voted against something. They were taking on his kid.
Well, I told these people, as far as I was concerned, they all ought to be in prison because you have a fiduciary responsibility to the taxpayers, and you essentially stole the money, even though it didn't personally go to you. You stole the money.
It's a lesson in the downside of democracy.
Really?
The joke I always flip out there, and everybody thinks I'm just giggling, is, you know, democracy can't be four wolves and a chicken voting what they have for breakfast. You know,
No, it's the chicken then picks up a gun and says, let's try it.
Maybe.
That's called a republic.
But where I grew up, my parents lived there. Obviously, I grew up there. It's Evergreen Park. And Evergreen Park had a very nice high school, except for the part that the Unabomber came from it.
I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah, and, but, you know, I still, even though I grew up there, he was older than me, I don't know how the hell that all happened. Because Evergreen Park High School, I didn't go to school there, but I went to some summer class. I think I took typing there. I took a bunch of stuff there in the summertime. They always had fitness classes, so I'd go there and so forth because it was kind of fun. But I don't even know. In those days, I don't even think most high schools taught calculus. Maybe they did your senior year. So how they could have found out, or how this guy could have become a calculus genius at age 16, which would be what, sophomore year? I have no idea. He couldn't have learned it there. Anyway, the story was my parents lived there, and it was kind of a community where, you know, regular families that had gotten older, and some of the kids had moved away. And whenever the vote came down for this stuff, essentially the old people always won. And the school was fine. The athletic fields were okay. You know, one year they put in all-weather track and that kind of thing. Well, now it seems like the old people, like my parents, have croaked. And evidently, a lot more people must go to the school, Well, now all of a sudden they're winning all these bond issues.
Right.
My brother lives right near the high school, and if there isn't five construction crews there every day, it looks like a college campus now, for God's sake, with the softball fields, the baseball field looks 10 times better.
Oh, I know.
I mean, it's just winning. And if you got kids, you vote yes. If you don't have kids, you say you got enough, because I didn't have that when I went to school, and I did fine. You know, so I mean, it really is it's a numbers game. You know, I mean, it sort of is. And I, you know, that's the downside of democracy. I don't know what it. Democracy is the worst form of government in the world, except all the rest are worse, or something along those lines. You know, I mean, it's nothing is clean. I mean, obviously, I mean, I listened to talk about a lady who's pissed off that Marjorie Taylor Greene. I listened to one of her rants yesterday on YouTube.
Yeah.
And you know what? But you know what? It's, I don't know that once you get up to that point and all of a sudden you're on the outside looking in. I mean, she's ranting and raving about how the people that give money to Trump, and the people who gave money to probably other presidents, I just think he is worse. She goes, they run this country. You don't. So she goes, somewhere we've got to pull this back somewhat, or we're going down a rat hole like a lot of other countries. She goes, those people are running the place. They don't care about you. You think they do, you're out of your friggin' mind. I mean.
The thing is that the entire point of a Republican form of government, not Republican as in GOP, Republican
right.
as in representative, is that you, for example, you know, this crap that we talk about all the time with 15 U.S.C. and 15 U.S.C. Chapter 1 and 8 U.S.C. 1324, among others, is that it doesn't matter who you are, you're not supposed to be able to get away with that, right?
Yeah.
And I've made a big stink about this. It's kind of interesting because, you know, Mark Cuban, who, you know, I'm not a huge fan of, about a month ago, back in the beginning of February, came up and issued a challenge at a speech. You know, this kind of group that they were having. You know, these nubby nubby, you know, nubby baby. Let's rub each other's hands, kind of thing. And he says the answer to all of this trouble with healthcare and costs is simply this: break up the big insurance companies. Okay, which by the way. You think, right? All right. Boy, that got buried fast, right? Now, Tennessee has a pending bill that would make it illegal for a firm that owns pharmacies, to also own PBMs. All right.
Too late.
Well, CVS has said, if you do this, we're leaving the state. All right. If you pass this, we're leaving the state. My answer to that is, excuse me, Tennessee's antitrust law. Now, most states also have an antitrust law, as does the federal level. Tennessee's, however, is especially good if anyone would ever use it, because the penalty for violations in Tennessee can include the revocation of a corporate charter.
That's
now, if you do that to a company, they're done. All right, I mean, you know, you can't operate without either either if you're registered in that state or as a foreign corporation, you can't operate without being registered in the state at all. All right, I mean, even when I ran my little internet company, we wanted to go into Wisconsin, we had to register as a foreign corporation in Wisconsin in order to do that, because you have to pay taxes and, you know, and everything else. And you have compliance requirements there. So I'm like, excuse me, you don't need a new law. You have a perfectly good one as it stands.
Okay. Well, but I think that's another thing that, since I've been doing the show and I haven't talked to him in a while, I suppose I could get him back on someday. A friend and client, a man named John Dyer, was on the show. God, it had to be a long time. Maybe, I think it might have been before Carl. And if there's a guy who knows more about drug companies and pharmacy benefit managers, I don't know if he exists. He was the youngest guy ever on the OSCO board, like years and years ago.
Oh, Jewel OSCO, yeah.
Yeah, and OSCO was the drug.
OSCO was the drug store, right.
And then he ended up working for a pharmacy benefit manager. And when I say working for, he was on their board. Somehow or another, Harold, the reason why CVS has to own the pharmacy benefit manager, and again, this is from way back in the back of my head here. If you and I open up a pharmacy, and just go to somebody and say, we want to buy the drugs, there's kind of like one price. Now, maybe there still isn't, but somehow or another, the pharmacy benefit manager, who maybe represents a union, represents an insurance company, represents something, if they can drive somebody to a certain place, they get the kickback from the drug company.
Right, which by the way, is illegal.
Right, which is illegal. Well, kickback's such a horrible word, but... So,
well, no.
Yeah,
they
somehow can get the kickback from the drug company, where the Walgreens, that's why Walgreens is you know, if you don't have that, you're pretty much out of business. If you don't get that grift in the middle, you can't compete.
Right, but here's the thing. Under federal law, any program that touches federal money, it is illegal. It's a felony to structure things in such a way that you get a kickback.
It's under state law. The three guys who went through the red lights this morning shouldn't do it. They still did it.
I get it. Nobody goes to jail. Okay. Now, by the way, the stuff that's going on right now, you know, I mean, you saw this, you know, that huge spike in the futures, you know, because Trump comes out and says, well, you know, they're kind of out of missiles and this and that and everything. Why am I getting this flashback from when Bush stood on the deck of the carrier?
Yeah.
Okay. Mission accomplished. Remember this?
Yep.
All right. And was it? Not so much. The hubris that comes from doing this kind of thing. And you know what? This is what
politicians... Well, no, we're starting with a guy who has massive hubris to start with.
Well, but politicians do this as a, you know, as a standard.
By the way, you didn't follow through on the 1954. This is now, and if you're old enough, this is the third time in your lifetime that the U.S. has orchestrated a regime change in, or tried to, in the same country.
Well, I wasn't alive in 1954, but...
Close. I mean, you were 60 or something, 65.
Yeah, no, but I wasn't born in 1954.
I know what I'm saying, but you can, like, math, I said, right? I said, if you were old enough, it's right. The third time in your lifetime.
Oh, yeah. Well, here's the fun part about this, is that, you know, you remember just a couple of days ago, Trump said that I get to vote. I get a vote on who leads the country.
Yeah.
Okay? You want to talk about something that made the hair on the back of my neck stand up? You know, right there it was, right? There the truth is. All right, fine, except for one
thing. Well, why does that surprise you when you take out leaders of a place? Well, you only take them out because you want to put your guy in.
Oh, okay. Well, Chief, that you know, that bridge runs both directions, all right, once you lay that.
And one would think, yeah.
Well, and as I said when this started, I said, this is, as far as I'm concerned, this is a good thing. And the reason it's a good thing is that if we, you know, returning to something that is approximately what we had when knights were old and, you know, it had to get on their horse and the king had to get on his horse, he was always at the risk that some lucky SOB was going to find the islet with an arrow, right? And he died just as easily as everybody else if that happened.
There's a big difference between a leader leading people into war and maybe dying and somebody else sneaking in and grabbing them from another country.
Well, I understand that, but here's the thing. This, you know, if we are returning to something that push-button war is no longer safe for the people who do the button pushing, I applaud this, all right? I like the fact that these people are now, by their own declaration, at risk.
They didn't declare the war. We did.
Well, No. I'm saying, if God forbid, you wake up tomorrow morning and D.C. is under a mushroom cloud. What was D.C.? We earned it. We deserved it. And by the way, it's legitimate.
I don't like killing anybody.
Well, I don't want it to happen. Okay, I'm not. Cheerleading for it. I'm saying that when you go to war, the leadership has to be at risk, both themselves and their families. And that should be the case. And the reason it should be the case is it tempers
I don't have a real problem with in Japan the emperor being at risk. But I'm not so sure just because I don't like a country, the guy becomes at risk because I'm stronger.
Well, here's the thing. I get where you're going, okay? We're strong, but you know what?
Or no, we don't like the Cuban guy now. Is he fair game?
Well,
what about the Denmark guy that won't give us green?
Well, what if the Denmark guy can get somebody over here and get Melania?
Yeah, I don't want that to happen.
Well, you know what?
Yeah.
I don't want anyone to get whacked, right?
Well, you know, I have a big question for you here, but you know, we have one of the issues I have with the current administration. As a matter of fact, it's becoming the biggest one. Is I don't know if it's a mental thing, whether he's slipping or he always was like this. The idea that if you're not white and American, your life doesn't mean anything. I mean, the guy in Venezuela, I've had three people tell me. I said, you know, we just didn't take the guy. We killed 65 people.
Well, now wait a minute, Chief. Excuse me, but this you're characterizing this inaccurately.
We didn't kill 65 people?
No. Your statement was, if you're not white and American.
Okay. Well, I bet the response I got from three separate people were, that's okay, they were Cuban.
Well, that's BS.
How many people have we knocked off in Iran?
Okay, hold on a minute. Now, I don't know how many people we've killed in Iran, but I'll tell you what, I bet it's not a couple.
No, and what about the people on the boat we just left swimming in the water?
Well, now that's that, by the way, you know, brought back memories of Das Boot, right?
Yeah.
With the German submarine commander, you know, he literally orders the survivors to be machine gunned. All right, how is that really any different from torpedoing?
Well, we're not. Those guys were officially saying we could have.
They were combatants, and these guys.
Well, we were. This was a situation. The things on the high seas.
We could have
buzzed it twice. Had the submarine come up and said, "Follow us," and where else were they going to go?
Here's the thing: is that they were not involved in the war. Okay, that ship that we blew up.
I don't have any problem capturing it.
Well, but we weren't. They weren't involved in the war. They weren't headed to be involved in the war. Okay, they were not like going and getting refueled in order to get in the fight, right? That wasn't what they were doing. We just blew them up because it happened to be an Iranian naval asset.
Yeah, and somebody in Washington said we're gonna destroy their navy, so it was okay.
Well, yeah, that ship was still around, so let's blow it up.
Yeah,
I mean,
real quick question because I don't know when Joel's gonna pop in, but the oil price spiked. Now it's back down.
Yeah,
but
right. I warned people a couple of days ago, Chief, and I said, all you got to do, you know, the QM futures don't just trade front month. I mean, that's the one everyone sees. But you can go pull up the graphs on all the rest of them.
All right. My question is, the last time this happened was when Bush and all that stuff happened.
Right.
Okay. Well, we were producing, I could go back and find it, but I'm thinking maybe 5 million barrels a day, and we were importing probably 50% of what we used.
Yeah, not so much anymore.
Well, now we're supposedly even.
Except we are, but we're not. Now here's
I understand
reason.
That, but I'm saying the spike in gasoline and oil prices was higher now than it was greater now than it was then.
Right.
So why does that not compute to my feeble brain?
I'll tell you why it does compute, and it was a deliberate decision. And a serious problem from my point of view, and I raised a stink about it at the time, and that is we have changed. Do you ever notice how, all right, so back in 2003, 2004, and before that, in the summertime, diesel was always cheaper than regular unleaded gas, okay? That's no longer, that hasn't been true for more than 10 years now. The reason it's not true is because we made a policy change that oil companies are free to take stick straws in the ground on our land, suck the crude out of there, refine it, and then ship it to whoever will pay the most money for it overseas or domestically. As a result, we now export a huge amount of diesel, in particular fuel oil. This is the reason that what used to be a cyclical thing.
What year are we talking about? 2000.
This was about the time that ULSD was.
When was the second Iraq mess? Somewhere 2004, 2003.
I don't know that it corresponds with that.
But this whole area from 2000 to 2011, we were stuck on 5,700 barrels a day, 5.4 million barrels a day coming out of the fuel production here.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's roughly 30%, 40% of what we're doing now.
Right, right.
And yet we didn't have as big a spike in gas as we did last week.
Well, and but like I said, the reason is that, and by the way, even more insanely, we're now making this big brouhaha about exporting LNG.
Yeah.
Okay, which is insane, but, you know, there we are. So, Joel is up, by the way, if you
right,
wish no, to
I
kick
think,
me
I think
off.
Ken, I think Kenny's coming, but if not, we'll see in a bit. Joel, how are you?
Good morning, Chief.
What's your team going to win the NCAA? Your basketball team?
They're number one seed. We did suffer a significant injury to a guy that was just playing fantastic, LJ Kaysen. Right now, my main focus is the Big Ten tournament, and kind of conflicted about that because, you know, 3 games in 3 days ahead of the tournament can be taxing. But they do get a triple bye. They should have a fairly easy game on Friday. Saturday and Sunday should be tougher. But just overall, my sentiment, they have as good a chance as Duke or Florida or the other number
Duke
one.
Duke looks
seeds,
pretty good, but they got a couple guys hurt too, right?
Yeah. Well, North Carolina got a guy hurt. I don't think Duke has anybody hurt. Duke has a dominating player in Cameron Boozer. I'll just say, you know, longtime Michigan.
Well, Duke had a couple of guys that walked to the locker room during the North Carolina game. That's why I asked. I don't know if they are okay or not. I think they are probably.
Okay. I did not get a Duke update on it. I haven't heard anything about any significant injuries. As long as it's not Cameron Boozer. No, not Cameron Boozer. Cameron Boozer. Yeah. Carlos Boozer is the dad. So looking forward to it, Chief.
Well, it should be interesting. You wonder how these tournaments, I know in the Irish long time ago, because the guy's out of the pros. Who was the big lefty white guy? He had a big career in the NBA too. What the hell was his name? Troy Murphy.
Okay.
And so they thought they had a team that, you know, might do some damage in the NCAA tournament. And I don't think Digger was upset at all that they lost in like the semifinals or the quarterfinals of the Big East tournament. Last thing he wanted was 2 more games of people beating up on his people before, you know, a week before the NCAA tournament. I mean, there's a lot to be said for that. Not playing those last couple of games, because some of these conference games are pretty rough, obviously.
Yeah. But you know why they do it, Chief? You know.
Oh yeah, the Benjamins.
It's all about the Benjamin. But hey, I'll throw an old Notre Dame player out to you, and I'm sure you remember a longtime Piston.
Oh, Billy Lambert.
I got another one for you.
Flowers didn't play for them. What was the other one?
Kelly Trepuka.
Oh, God, yeah. He was just putting the ring of advanced guys at Notre Dame. I think he was just put up there. He's a good ball player.
Yep.
But Troy Murphy, interesting story there, is he didn't play his senior year because it in those days, the school could not buy the insurance. And his parents divorced, and nobody buy the insurance. So that's why he went after junior and didn't play his senior year at Notre Dame. Since then, there's some kind of a weirdo thing where the school can loan you the money to buy the insurance, and then somehow they forgive the loan, or if you make it to the NBA, you pay them back or some story. They, even though they can't buy it for you, they can loan the money for you to do it or something.
Now they just get their own money to do something.
Yeah, now they just pay them enough to they buy it themselves. But so what do you make of this? What are you making this market? When are you filling up your tank?
Ah, Chief, I got you here. Never, I'm never filling up my tank.
Well, your electric bills go up every month.
You know why?
You got a Fred Flintstone car. You pedal.
You're on the right track.
You have an electric. You got electric.
I got an EV.
Well, there you go. Well, what about your electric bills? Mine go up every month.
All my bills go up every month. But boy, Chief, is it a war? Is it a conflict? Call it what you will. I don't have any answers for you. Yesterday, you know, we were thinking, you know, Trump does like to see the market go down. We'll get some talk, but, you know, reading the headlines today, are you comfortable in telling yourself and the investors that, you know, the conflict is over?
No, I
just am not an expert in this, but certainly doesn't seem that way to me.
Well, I was trying to put, actually, I don't want to put it, I don't want to think about it, but I was trying, I was listening to some lady who obviously does, you know, just takes your money, puts it in, you know, Big Cap Mike or Big Cap Bob and Mid Cap Mike and put it in there, and you're there. You're never supposed to complain if the market goes down because you're in for the long haul, right? Or some other crap. Well, I got news for you. For somebody who does this for a living, you can tell people they're in for the long haul, but if you break even after 30 years, you're not a very, it's not, people are not happy with you, are they? So this whole concept of us going to war without really telling anybody or not getting approval, that's another whole story, but we're broke. And now we have the Treasury Secretary is coming out and saying he wants $1.7 trillion more, you know, than he had before, because look, we're spending $1 billion a day. And we're running, our deficit's going up $1 trillion every 44 days right now. I don't know if you knew that or not. So, okay, so if some countries are pissed at us, or they just don't they have the money, if they don't show up for one of these auctions, to a certain extent, these long-term rates go from 4.1. By the way, the rates have gone up every single day since it started. That's not supposed to happen. It has. They're not high yet, but they're creeping. If long-term rates go to 8%, what kind of a tax increase are we going to have to cover that? Where's the market going to go, and where are housing prices going to go? This is all like, people don't understand. This could all be dominoes. I hope it isn't, but it sure as hell could be, right? I mean, if we can't keep borrowing $1 trillion more every, or if we're going to print it, then what's the inflation rate going to be? Look at how sneaky inflation has been in the last 3 months. The stuff you never even dreamed has gone up. You know, Hunter and I went to breakfast at the little place that's been there forever, owned by these two older ladies. For God's sake, there's $17 stuff on the menu at breakfast at a place that's been there 100 years. You know, we're not talking about, you know, some really fine restaurant. I mean, it's reached the point where, what are we doing here? Especially now that eggs are back down to $2 a dozen. I mean, how do you get a $17 omelet when the eggs are $2 for a dozen? So, I mean, we're reaching somehow catastrophic. So I can't believe what these next CPI numbers and stuff are going to be. I mean, what? The only thing that held us down last time was gas, right? Where's that going to show this month? I mean, you got to be real careful here, I think, and we're not being careful, I don't think.
Are you trying to talk common sense again?
Well, yeah, we don't want to do that. But I'll tell you, for my people, everybody is protected at some level here. If any of this happens, and the funny part of it is, Joel, it's not designed, the protected program is not designed to be a trading vehicle. But it sure as hell is when this happens. You go flying down, you roll your puts down, you go flying back up, you roll them back up. I mean, if you have the ability to be protected in this kind of a market, you can trade it. If you're not, I don't know how you do it. I mean, imagine if you would have bought at the beginning, you know, a week ago, if you'd have bought the straddle this week in the NQs or something. Now, normally, if you buy the straddle, which means you buy the call and the put, you probably can't trade enough to equal the time decay in that particular thing, right? But if you had that straddle, you could have bought the S&Ps two nights ago down $150 because you had the puts to protect you. You could have bought them and been protected and ran them up, what, 700 points? When you did the NQs? You can't do it if you're naked. I can't, and I know sure as hell wouldn't want any customer doing it. But if you have planned for it, if you already had some puts down there, and you could be a buyer, how much money could you have made, for God's sake, if you planned ahead? And normally, the markets don't let you buy the insurance at a price where you can trade enough to make up for it. But, boy, in the last few months, I think they have. Not that I have anybody doing it, but I've never seen stuff like this. Have you? Of course,
I mean, the strategies that make sense, Chief, and I think I just think we need to just take, if anything we've learned for this market, we just got to take it day by day, yep. night by night, and keep an eye on the news because in the headlines, because that's dominating. But
look at,
I got to wrap it today, Chief.
Well, give me 1 second here. Look at Friday. I'm looking at Microsoft here. We have a lot of Microsoft for people.
Okay.
Stock's trading roughly 410, was 408. But the straddle for Friday is $11. Friday, for God's sake, $11. That's a 2.5% move. We went how many years where we didn't make a 1% move in a day for how many years? But now we're talking 3 days. We're going to go 2.5%.
Stop. I mean, this is not investment advice, but sell that puppy, man. Well, this thing ain't going back to 420 and. I don't know. It really looks like it's consolidating down here. So consolidated to go higher or lower, that's the question. I can't answer it, but certainly looks like those stocks have been beat up. So. Yep.
Are you going to Indianapolis? Are you going to watch any of the tournament?
Well, the Big Ten tournament, no, but I think that's in Chicago. But, I'll keep my fingers crossed. Indy's a short drive, so hopefully I'll be there. But,
by the way, I'm on your show Thursday. Looking forward to it.
Okay. All right. Go Blue. Talk to you on Thursday.
Do we have Kenny?
No Kenny, but we have Carlo.
Oh, well, we bring Carl on if Kenny piles in.
You do. You got me back.
Well, that's always a good thing. Some of these moves, I mean, I can't. I was listening. I don't want to. It's not giving investment advice, Carl, but I actually had some lady on yesterday talking about, I didn't, but she was on CNBC, and she's obviously, I don't think she was Fisher Investment. She's one of those places, give her money and don't worry, 20 years from now, everything will be okay. And, I've been around for, I wasn't trading, but I remember as soon as we went off the gold standard in 68, because I was interested in this stuff even when I was in high school, and, the market didn't go up for 13 years.
Yeah.
Now, you can say that you bought stock in 68 and sold it in 82 for a dollar higher that you made money. You can say that, but you're a blithering idiot. When the interest rates were 6 and 7 and 12% all along the way, and all you had to do was put it in a bank. I mean, you have to... I mean, I would never do this, but if Grandpa Carl was still alive and sent me money to manage, I guess I could put him in 30-year bonds. Well, if he's 90, I probably shouldn't, but I guess I could put him in 30-year bonds and say, don't worry, it's all safe. But if the interest rates go to 8% and that bond's trading $60 for the next 6 years, I don't think Grandpa Carl's going to be too happy. I could keep saying, don't worry, 30 years from now, you're going to get your money back. It's all cool. No, it's not.
Except Grandpa's going to be dead.
Well, yeah, but he's going to kill me. It's going to kill me before he goes under.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But, I mean, you got this whole idea that if I buy a stock at 400 and my great-grandkid sells it at 401, I somehow made money. Get that out of your brain, for God's sake. And how many people tell you that's okay?
Well, there's a lot of BS. It's just kind of the way it is. And so, yeah. Look, it looks like Kenny did pop in, so I'm going to not take his time.
Okay. All right, bud, we'll talk to you on Friday, if not before, if stuff even gets crazier.
Yeah, you'll see
me
on Friday. I think this is going to get very interesting here in the next
I might
days.
Think we'll have you back before Friday, so.
Well, you might. I'm around.
Okay, bud. Kenny, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
All right, you're 100%. You sound great.
Yeah, well, I feel great.
Well, good. Well, What did Ricardo Montalban say? When you look marvelous, you feel marvelous. Or something. Remember that?
yeah.
It was he was funny, wasn't he? That guy.
Right.
Well, he was great in Star Trek, and he was great in the one with the plane. What the hell was the name of that show?
Yeah, the plane. Yeah, it was called. What was the name of that show?
Something was it?
Fantasy Island.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Kenny. What do you make of this? And how? Why interest rates should be going down or going up? Gold was supposed to be going up. It went down. I mean, this is kind of goofy.
Well, first of all, what I make of this is, yesterday I think there was all that, that early weekend morning hysteria, started overnight, and oh, my God, and and the machines kick in, and suddenly oil surges up into 100. It creates all this hysteria around the world. Markets around the world get clobbered on the idea that, you know, suddenly everything's going to come to a grinding halt, nothing's going to come through the Strait of Hormuz, and all that stuff creates that early morning hysteria, which then created hysteria not only in oil, but then conversely hysteria in stocks around the world. Gold started to rally, bonds sold off, rates started to rise, all on the back of kind of those early morning headlines. And then when, you know, the day goes on and you start to hear some Trump takes to the press conference, talks about where we are, where he thinks we are, how we've destroyed, you know, all these different assets that the Iranians have, and that there's, you know, they've essentially come to their knees, whether or not they want to admit it or not, they have. Oil's going to flow through the strait. We're going to escort them if we have to. We're going to offer insurance to the tankers going through the strait. And so, you know, you clearly saw that what happened. It was this huge reversal, both in oil and in the markets. Now, the interesting is going to be today or tomorrow, whatever, is that really true? If they start to move tankers through the strait, is Iran somehow going to strike it with drones, with missiles? And if they do, I fear to think what the next move is going to be, because he made it very clear that he's going to hit them 20 times harder if they even think about.
Well, he's running $1 trillion every 44 days. That's a problem.
I hear you. But okay, what were we running during the Afghanistan war? Right. I mean, I hear you. It's expensive. I get it. But listen, in my opinion, I think somebody had to bring them to their knees. They've been threatening the world for 50 years. They've been killing and maiming their own people if they disagree. There's been, you know, no free speech. Women have been treated like second-class citizens. At some point, somebody had to put their foot down, and nobody was going to do it. Trump said he was going to do it in 2015. Okay, well, you know, when he was running for president, he said they were never going to have a nuclear bomb. And, you know, last week, this week, last month, I think he succeeded now in keeping that promise. I don't think they're going to have a nuclear bomb anytime soon.
Well,
the world's a safer place, quite honestly.
Okay. I don't really like the idea. I think that Rubio's speech is going to be played for the next 100 years is one of the dumbest things anybody ever said.
Well, okay, that's interesting, because Rubio's speech on the other side got huge kudos. Which speech are you talking about?
Well, we said that the we did it because the Israelis were going to do it, and we figured we had to go with them. The Israelis have been wanting to do this for 40 years. I mean, what made 2 weekends ago so important?
Well, I don't know what made 2 weekends ago so important. Was it the fact that Israel had had enough? Was it the fact that we've been talking
about Israel? Israel had no chance of doing this on their own. They've been trying to talk us into this for 40 years.
Agreed, but had we been, you know, clearly you have to believe that there have been these ongoing conversations. This didn't just happen on Friday night that, okay, we'll join you. They had to be planning for this, right?
Well,
there had to be a conversation.
Everybody assumes if you're a follower of this administration, it's somewhere beneath the crap we see on TV, there's incredibly moral, thoughtful people thinking this out. I don't buy that, but I mean, this whole idea of regime change. Now next week we're Cuba. Now we're going to be what, Denmark after that? I mean, where are we going with this?
The Cuba thing. I thought the Cuba thing was more, you know, poking. I don't think they're really.
I thought Venezuela was poking too, wasn't?
Well, yeah, but wait a minute. But Venezuela again was a different issue, right? Venezuela was at the core of sending fentanyl and drugs into this country as they were never
a fentanyl supplier. Cocaine, yes. Fentanyl comes from Mexico and China.
Cocaine, but directly into this country for years and years and years they've been doing it. And so I think the whole drug war, whether it's on Mexico, Venezuela, the whole nine yards, that also had to be stopped.
You either roll with this stuff or you don't. And if you roll with it, My mentality is 90% of the money on drugs is made in this country. There's no war on drugs here. There's no war on the people here.
Because there's a market for it, right?
Okay. We're not going to go into Congress and we're going to arrest everybody in Congress who has cocaine in their pocket. We're not going to do that. Okay, but we're going to blow people up in the water and say, well, that's stopping. It's not stopping. It does raise the price. you could actually say that you're helping the people out here, for God's sake, that sell it.
Well, it raises the price, but then can the people that need it afford to buy it, right? Well, so is it the same supply and demand issue?
Well, what I'm saying is if we want to stop it, there's people here, but we're not going to arrest the people here. They might be somebody you know.
I hear you.
I mean, but the question is, are we going to, I mean, you and I have talked, the last time this has happened, yeah, we probably, what do you think our national debt was during Afghanistan? It's not what it is now. I mean, we're talking about between the tariff situation, which is nothing but a flat-out lie to people that it's not a tax, okay, but they got pulled back. We're going to have another tariff. But they're talking somewhere along the line here. I look at these numbers, there's going to have to be some sort of a tax here someplace. And the only place you can get is with people that have money. And those are the people who don't want to give it. So I see all, somewhere along the line here, I see a lot of things, cars coming together toward the same intersection, and I wonder if it's all going to crash. I mean, we insult the hell out of Britain and all these other countries that are sending us all this money to finance all this crap. What if they don't show up someday because they're pissed at us? How are we going to cover it here?
Yeah, I hear you. I just... you know, it's a complicated story, and it gets more complicated. So, look, you make some great points. I hear you. But I'm on the side that I think the world is in a safer, better place as a result of what's happened, both in Venezuela and in Iran.
There's a certain truth to that, but I don't want a dictator here, and I sure as hell don't want him to be world dictator.
No, who said he's going to be a world dictator?
Well, he does.
He's out in 3 years or two and a half.
Maybe.
Yeah, come on, don't go down that road where you think suddenly he's going to change the
rules.
What do you think
that Noam, who's out? I'll ask you this. I mean, I don't. We don't really talk politics that much, nor do I want to dive into it. She's talking about hiring 92,000 people for her Gestapo. What do we need 90? What are they going to do? We're not talking. We're going way beyond the people that came across the border, maybe illegally. What?
Yeah, but Noam is out. She's not
okay.
In that
but position. So, but I mean, that wasn't her idea. Somebody gave her the money, or thought they were going to give her the money for that. I mean, what exactly are we doing? I mean, now we're talking about he's going to shut down Congress unless he gets the identify everybody by a citizen and ID inside of 6 months for people. Now we're gonna keep people away from the election. A lot of stuff is going on behind the scenes here. At least he's saying it is. It appears to be pretty bizarre to me. He's not going to sign a bill until that comes out of there. I don't know if you saw that one. Unfortunately, you got to keep up on this stuff. I mean, I don't know who's writing.
No, I hear you. I'm not sure that I'm sure. Because to your point, the election is 6 months from now, not 2 years from now. So that may be putting an undue pressure on people that don't have the proper identification, to not be able to vote. So I'm in the camp that I think there's obviously going to be a concession somewhere along the line. There's got to be because it's too close ahead, and he's not going to get that.
Well, some lady coming back from the Middle East. She lives in Skokie. I don't know what her nationality is. She was a citizen, had the identification. She showed up at O'Hare on Saturday. The gundams grabbed her. No phone call to her family. They had no idea where she was. They were looking at the detention center in Broadview. Couldn't find her there. It turns out her phone turns on somewhere in Wisconsin. They had spirited her to Wisconsin, and they realized, okay, she's a citizen, and they let her go 2 days later. I mean, doesn't anybody think that's a problem, Kenny?
Well, of course that's a problem, but
what's the how do you kidnap somebody to O'Hare, take them to Wisconsin, not even inform the family, not even find a lawyer? Turns out she was a citizen.
Well, okay, but here's where the story gets, and I'm not familiar with that story, but here's the question. If you come to get arrested and you say, whoa, I'm an American citizen, here's my license or whatever.
There are all kinds of people that have done that. And if you don't have whatever they want, your identity on you, she must have had her passport if she came back here.
She must have had a passport.
So, I mean, I don't know what... I'm saying these little mistakes are happening all over the place.
Okay, I agree with you. So that obviously should not have happened. I get that. I don't think that's an everyday occurrence. I don't know why it happened.
I think it is, actually.
I don't know who this person is or was, whatever. I don't know who she is that they would have targeted her. Could it have been, you know, misidentifying? Could have been. I haven't seen the story. I have to read the story to see kind of, to read the story. But, no, do I agree that that should have happened? Of course that should not have happened.
We're talking about amazingly untrained people. They actually who's the guy? The guy just retired. He was their training officer. He goes, no, we're not doing the normal training for these people. Okay. And yet I've talked to people.
What training are they
doing? They're supposed to be, I mean, for an ICE officer, it's supposed to be 4 months in some place in Texas.
Right.
And it's supposed to be a pretty serious, at least 4 months type of thing. And I'm sitting there going, boy, they just seem to have all these people all of a sudden, and the 4 months doesn't. And if I have, you know, a couple people on the show, no, they would never do something like that. Sure enough, this guy gets in front of Congress and goes, yeah, we're cutting it like in half. We're not even there. We're just putting people out on the street. Where he goes, I teach a bunch of these different classes, and I haven't taught anybody. Okay. Like restraint and how to arrest somebody.
Well, okay, I obviously don't agree with that either. I clearly am under the impression that ICE officers, like other officers, are trained properly. I mean, that's the impression I'm under. You're telling me that none of these guys are trained.
I didn't say none, but the people that have just been hired, I mean, it's been truncated. I mean, all the stuff that's going on, I wonder where it is. But now, market-wise, what if all this comes together and we don't have enough money? Given our debt right now and given where the market is and where housing prices are, what does a 9%, and again, Kenny, I'm with you, I don't want it to go there, I don't want my clients getting hurt. What does a 9% rate do to all this stuff we talk about all the time?
You know, a 9% rate on what?
Like a 10-year.
On the 10-year. I don't think we want a 9%.
I'm just saying, what does 7 do? We're talking about stuff that's pretty high to start with.
Yeah, right. Well, listen, 5 is really the level, right? 5 is when you have to start being more concerned about the economy and not only what the economy is doing, but where it starts going and what that says about the economy. 9 or 7 would be a disaster at the current moment, right? I think 5 is where you have to. 5 is the cutoff point on the 30-year, and 4.5 is the cutoff on the 10-year.
Okay, but I mean, why do we think, and I, or hope, which I do too, why do we think at $1 trillion every 44 days that somehow or another these guys are going to continue to borrow money at 4%?
They should be able to borrow. Because listen, I don't see a reason for rates to go higher from here. I see them where they should be. I don't see they should go lower. I don't think they should go higher. I think the economy is strong enough to support it. I don't think there's any reason for anyone to say we need to cut rates. I don't. But nor do I think we need to raise rates, right?
Well, I'm not talking about us.
4.1%.
I'm not talking about us raising. I'm talking about people not wanting them at 4%, because what it's going to do, well, suppose they print half the dough.
Well, if they print half of it, yes, that's going to put more pressure in the bond market. It's going to send yields higher.
Yep.
Yes, I agree. But that's always been the case, right? That's always the case is what happens if. We've expected for the last year and a half that there's going to be a surge in bonds available. We've been talking about that the bond market's going to get hit with a surge of new issues in order to pay for all the stuff we're doing. But yet the market hasn't done anything. It's been right in here. It hasn't freaked out. It's been between 4% and 4.2%.
I mean, I understand that. I mean, I'm trying to do is, by the way, neither one of us know the answer to this, Kenny, but I ask the question because you have a better answer than anybody. It's certainly me. We're talking about $1 trillion every 44 days, right? Yeah. Now, there's only three ways we're going to get it. One is we're going to borrow it. Two is we're going to print it. Or three is we're going to tax it. And it doesn't appear we're going to tax it. As a matter of fact, we might have to get money back on these. I really hope that out of all the things I wish Congress would do, as much as I, you know, nobody's more against the tariffs than me, I honestly believe, Kenny, those guys should get together, pass something, and say, no tariffs going forward, but the stuff we collected, we're not giving back. That's going to be a circle something. I mean, it's not going to get to anybody who actually paid them. It's just a joke. We'll just say, let bygones be bygones. I really believe that. And I know I shouldn't, but I do. You agree with that? I mean, I don't think we need to go through that mess.
Well, do you? No, I don't think we need to go through that mess for sure. I don't think we need to go through that mess. But let me ask you a question. Do you think that have the tariffs created so much uncertainty or unrest in the economy that it's, I don't think it has. Do you think it's created so much unrest in the economy?
I think an awful lot of smaller businesses that they're on the radio here in Chicago all the time saying they're getting buried by it. Here's my issue with it, Kenny. If Trump were to go out and say, I'm going to have a 10% sales tax countrywide, he couldn't get that out of the outhouse. Okay, but now a tariff is essentially the same thing. Yeah. He says, we're going to do that, and by the way, other people are paying it. That's a flat-ass lie. If he comes out and says, I like tariffs better than a sales tax. If Congress votes it in as a tax, because Congress is supposed to be the taxing body, if they vote it in, I'm not going to be happy about it, but at least I think it's legit, where you told people, yeah, it is a tax, and this is how we're going to do it, instead of a sales tax. If that's what they have to do, or they want to do, hell, I don't like the income tax. But that, you know, I'm saying, if it's done properly, I don't really have a problem with it. But the fact that it's a big lie, I have a problem with.
Right.
I mean, it is, okay, I don't know if it's education or people want to believe these guys. I've run into all kinds of people who tell me, oh, no, the people in Germany are paying that tax. No, they're not. What are you talking about? Just be legit is all I care, Kenny, because there's a lot of things.
I agree. They should be legit. I guess it's all a matter of rhetoric, right? Is he wrong when he describes it that way? No. Could you describe it a different way than what you're describing it? You could. I mean, it depends on
you could tell the truth. But I don't know if he knows how to do that.
Now, come on. Yes, you could tell the truth. But I think, if I choose not to buy something because the price has gone up because the tariff is in it, then I choose not to buy it, right?
It's well, my the same, choice. Same I don't thing, have to buy it. Same thing we said for sales tax.
If you don't buy it,
you don't pay it.
Yeah, right.
Right? I mean, same thing we said for income tax. If you don't work, you don't have to pay it.
Yeah, well, you're right. I mean, we could sit here and argue this back and forth all day long because there's pluses and minuses to both sides of the...
Well, but the idea that we're doing it because people are screwing us, that's not the reason. We're doing it because it's a tax. Just say it. I don't know. I mean, when the truth hurts, it should. It's a tax, dummy. It is. Let's just say it.
Yeah, okay. I hear you. I don't necessarily have a problem with that because I think most people view it as a tax anyway, right? A tax.
No, most people are convinced that these countries are screwing us.
Well, but I think they were.
Why?
I think trade imbalances were not fair because they were deals that were made years ago. The world has changed, so change with the world. That's all. I have no problem with any updated trade agreements and I don't have a problem keeping,
but everybody... There isn't anybody that I've had, you probably could. I don't know, there isn't anybody, cause this is a tough one because I spent a lot of time on this in grad school for whatever reason. I was in some course. There isn't anybody who has a huge opinion on this that can actually take me through one country and the balance back and forth and where the money goes and whether we're being screwed or not. Just, oh, wait a minute, Trump said we're being screwed, so we're being screwed. Oh, okay, well, that's fine.
I'm not the person to do that to you, but there are plenty of people, I would imagine, economists, whether they're in the administration or not, that are going to be able to discuss both the pluses and minuses, and we've seen it, pros and cons of tariffs ever since he instituted them, a year ago or 2 years, whatever it was, a year and a half ago, since he instituted, right? There are people clearly on both sides of that fence. Some people think it's a benefit. Other people clearly, like you, don't think it's a benefit, but clearly...
What are we... trying to accomplish. I mean, take Liechtenstein, okay? They were on Trump's list as screwing us because we had a trade imbalance. You know what we import from Liechtenstein?
What? Nothing.
False teeth?
Yep. From Liechtenstein?
Yep, that's what they make.
Is that where all those teeth come from?
Yeah, well, not all of them, but the best ones... All right, so we buy $3 million worth of false teeth from Liechtenstein.
Yeah.
Okay, and they don't buy a bunch of stuff from here. Okay, so Liechtenstein has $3 million of our dollars over there, and we got a bunch of false teeth. Now, what happens if it's $3 million? They go and buy something from Britain with it, right? And maybe Britain turns around and buys something from here. That's the way this is supposed to work. Every trade imbalance is not a screw job. Everybody thinks it is. It's not. It's all very vibrant. It's all now. If some country decides, like he talks about dairy stuff in Canada, all right, and how we're being screwed. Well, actually, the stuff in Canada, the dairy things, is a sort of a quota slash tariff, okay? Because what ends up happening is people in Canada say, look, we're willing to import a bunch of dairy, but we're not willing to import enough to where our dairy farmers go out of business, because if something ever happens, like if you ever get a president that doesn't like us, we want to be able to have our own dairy farms, right? So there's actually a duty they put on U.S. dairy stuff, but once it reaches a certain level, it jumps way up, because now we're... By the way, it's the exact same thing we do with sugar. Our tariff on sugar is 4 cents a pound up until it gets to a certain amount, to where you start to impact that we might not have our own sugar producers, then it jumps to 12. Same thing Japanese do with rice. We'll import a certain amount of rice at this level, but if it gets much higher than that, our farmers are going to go out of business, and we want to be able to feed ourselves in case anything bad. This happens all over the place. This is never explained to anybody. This is just, oh man, these guys are screwing us on dairy. We don't have the same guy saying, by the way, we're screwing somebody else on sugar. We never get the whole story out of these people.
Yeah, well, I hear that.
I mean, a lot of this stuff, we're not about to put all of our sugar people out of business here, which foreign people could, because it's a lot cheaper to grow it somewhere else. Because we want to be able to do it here, because guess what? If something ever bad happens, we want to be able to have enough that we can live on, right? And people do that all the time. Same thing we do with forestry products in Canada. If we didn't do that here, the Canadian wood would be so cheap that we wouldn't have a forester left. So everybody has this kind of baseline. So it's way more complicated than people pound out there to say. Just saying. And the more you keep people in the dark, the more you can shoot off your mouth and just do stuff and people believe you.
Well, but isn't that true with everything? The more you keep people in the dark, the more you can say what you want.
But I don't like people in the dark. That's why I do the show.
Oh, okay, agreed. I'm not supporting keeping people in the dark at all. But we could spend all day, because it's complicated. So
yeah.
There are pros and minuses. There are pros and cons to both. Let's be honest, right? There are. But it's a complicated world we live in at the moment. So,
well, if somebody's
I don't think it's getting any easier because you and I are trying to solve this problem.
No, well, you know, but it's pretty interesting. There's different points of view. I'll let you go with this one. I mean, Milton Friedman, people said, what about people that dump stuff over here? You know, the old dumping stuff. China was dumping stuff.
Right.
And Milton Friedman said, well, if somebody's stupid enough to sell you something below cost, buy all of it you can and spend the money on something else. You know, there's that point of view too, right?
I mean,
you don't want to get to the point where you have no steel companies, but if these idiots are willing to sell us steel at half the price that they should sell it to us, I guess we buy it, right?
We should buy it, right, if they're selling it to us half the price. Man, all right, listen, I got to jump.
All right, buddy, you take care of yourself. When are you on TV?
I'll be on Friday morning.
In New York? You got to go?
No, I'll do it remote Friday morning from here.
All right, good luck to you, buddy.
I'm not going to be in New York till the end of the month.
All right.
All right.
Do we have Professor Hal?
Yes, we do.
Hal, we got you in the middle of a mess, all the stuff we're talking about.
Yeah, it's quite the mess, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think we don't seem to have a whole lot of... We need guys like you teaching the whole population, not just a class. Because I think...
Yeah, well, you know, unfortunately, the people who teach the stuff that China bought into, we mentioned this last week, people who have taught economics for 20, 30 years have sold China on it, and China's realizing that it's a house of cards that's going to crumble down. And unfortunately, Democrats and Republicans in the United States listen to the economists who preach this stuff. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what's the solution? Elect the Democrats? You know?
Well,
I don't think that's the solution.
Well, the solution, I believe, is in the 60% of the population that is somewhat moderate, has some common sense, that neither side attracts, and they just split that vote. I mean,
I've always said that people choose not to vote because of two reasons. Well, maybe three reasons. Either they don't care, or maybe they just aren't into it at all. And then there's a group of people that choose not to vote because they don't like voting for either one, because they follow the advice of...
Well, look at the last election. How could you like either one of those people?
Yeah. They follow the advice of Monty Brewster. None of the above, right?
Well, what has changed This is one man's view of the political system.
And I say, if your vote is not to vote because you can't vote for either candidate from those two parties, that's a legit vote.
Well, sure.
And for half my adult life, I've taken that stance. So people can't say I'm not voting. Oh, I am, because I'm not voting for crap or crappier.
Well, that's a problem. I mean, if you're going to be involved in the process, the idea, I mean, just a regular American.
I can't even vote for a Libertarian candidate anymore.
I voted for a couple. The last two have been so bad I can't even do that.
Yeah.
But it used to be, you know, I've been around a while. It used to be that if you were on the extreme right or the extreme left, the votes were in the middle. They always told the tale, right?
So, well, the primaries are where you find out who the candidates really are.
But then when
the general election comes, they all move to the center. But you know where they are.
Well, now the primaries, since you only have 15-20% of the people vote, the people you get out of the primaries aren't necessarily the best people. They appeal to somebody. But it used to be...
There are people who got out of primaries in the House of Representatives with like 10,000 votes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but you had... Even in Clinton's time, which is a while ago now, what you did is you circled, if you were on the left, you circled to the, say the word, the tree huggers, you circled all the way over there, you got the checks, because maybe that's where the money was, you held your nose, and you head back in the middle and tried to get your votes from...
Well, but, that kind of system creates a perverse incentive, right?
Well, I'm saying...
A politician who can win in such an election... has to be slimy, right?
Well,
a group of people one thing, and they tell another group of people the opposite.
Well, I don't know how much you have to decide that you don't promise, or if you were, if you're on the right, you went and found some guy who, God knows what the rightest guy wants to do, you get the money from him, but you can't promise somebody you're going to do. Now, Clinton was pretty good at promising you something, walking out and forgetting all about it. I mean, those guys are pretty good at that.
He was a great politician.
Oh, yeah. But on a personal level, everybody liked him.
That's not necessarily a good quality about a person.
Well,
to be called a great politician is not necessarily a good thing.
Well, I mean,
be proud of.
Part of it is you have to be able to walk into a room and people like you.
Yeah.
You have to appeal to them. You have to look like
My first experience with a politician one-on-one happened in college. I was the treasurer of the math club at Idaho State University when I was in graduate school. And I went over to my congressperson or representative, and I told him about this program. We want to bring in a speaker. And he told me to my face, "Oh, this sounds like a great idea. I support it 100% because you're going to be bringing this eminent speaker to campus, and it's going to..." And then I go to the budget meeting, and this guy with a straight face, I don't know if he even recognized who I was. I'm sitting there in the audience, and when our budget came up, he voted it down.
Well, I mean, there was a guy who was running for governor here, I think it was governor. I don't think it was senator against Obama. A guy named Blair Hall, you've heard that name. He was a big time trader here, big investor. He's one of the few guys that he kind of invented, I mean, a few guys were with him, the massive hedging techniques that you see now, where people start buying IBM. He not only would sell the options, somebody go buy the stock, but he might have five or six other stocks he buys as well. In those times, it might have been digital, it might be Hewlett, but he had his big, huge auto quote system, and he had a big hedging system. He's a really, really a bright guy. And he decides he's going to run for governor. And he's got all his dough, and he's got all these commercials. But nice guy if you talk to him, but did not exactly have the effervescent political personality, right?
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there having breakfast over at the series, which is where the traders used to hang out.
I think I come to the conclusion that some people want to be lied to.
Well, but I mean, no, John and I are having breakfast, and he goes, "Well, there's Blair Hall." And I go, "Well, yeah, it's Blair." He goes, "He's going to be the next governor. He's got all this money." I said, he walks out, and I go, "John, I'll bet you breakfast the guy didn't come close to being governor."
Yeah.
He goes, "What do you mean?" "Man, he's eating breakfast by himself." When he walked out, this is a room, and I like the guy. This is a room where all his people in here are his friends. He didn't wave to one person or say hello.
Wow.
that dude is not going to be governor. I don't care how much money he's got. I mean, that you have to engage people. You have to let people know by your personality, by whatever, that you give a crap. I mean, Gerald Washington here in town, the first black mayor. Everybody loved the guy. Yeah. He showed up. He had a big smile. Cared about you. Asked how you were doing. I mean, there is no question that Harold gave a crap about you.
You know, well, I mean, that was his persona.
But he actually did.
He turns around. He's like, "Who's that guy?"
Well, you know, but those guys, Mayor Daley went. The original Mayor Daley went to three wakes a night. Actually, and his point
after the wake, I doubt he remembered what happened.
You know what? I don't sell those dudes. Sure, that's the kind of politicians that used to be in the city. They knew you. They were approachable. You could walk up and ask them something. They weren't ivory tower people.
Well, it's like one of my dad passed away. The hospital administrators, the doctors were very caring when he was alive. A day later, when I needed to go get some forms signed, man, they couldn't care less about who I was.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, I'm bothering them. And come on, that's what a politician is, right?
I'm saying
the cameras are off, they're going to walk away and they're going to go, I don't want to talk to that dude again.
There were people here who felt that everybody knew that if you knew the right person, you could get Uncle Joe a job, right? But Uncle Joe had
that's a problem too.
Well, you know what?
Uncle Joe gets it.
Why not the
kid that dropped out of high school because he was bored?
Well, I'm saying, but the difference is Uncle Joe had to show up and he better show up.
Yeah.
Now they just want the paycheck for somebody and they didn't even show up. How did we get to that?
Yeah.
I mean, I got the nod and got a job as a janitor. I never missed a day.
You know how I got my first job? It was at a restaurant. My mom was the she ran a unlicensed daycare. I'm saying this on the air. I can't believe I'm saying it. But she ran a
statute of limitations are long gone.
And she was the apartment manager. I had to fix everything because I could fix stuff. And then she drove school bus. And I used to take care of the kids when she was driving school bus. And three of the kids in our unlicensed daycare were Dale Devish's kids. And Dale Devish was the head chef at Dodge City Inn. And I walked over there and I said, Mr. Devish, I need a job. I was only 15. And I go, I'll work for free. And he goes, you won't have to work for free, Hal. So he hired me. So
well,
I
what's wrong with that?
For free for the first week. Right.
What's wrong with that? You went and made some dough.
I was making $3.35 an hour, but I was only 15. I think that might have been illegal. So I just admitted to two illegal acts.
I don't know about that. What was the first illegal act?
My mom running an unlicensed daycare.
You know, it's there's so many of those around here in Chicago.
Oh, there is, yeah. But, you know, that's a law that or regulation that government chooses not to enforce, right?
Well, you get a little of this.
Unless something bad happens within the unlicensed
if you,
daycare.
Back when the marijuana things, you had to really go through a big process to become one. Now there's one on every corner, right?
Yeah.
But my buddy got one of the licenses in Chicago, right? And, of course, finding a place to have one because you had to be... Hell, I think it was 1,000 yards from a school or a daycare. Now you can be anywhere, but licensed or unlicensed. So you had actually researched the area to find out if there was an unlicensed place that you were too close to. Because if it turns out you were too close to an unlicensed place, even though it wasn't printed anywhere, you could be booted.
Yeah.
How screwy was that?
Well, I mean, if you really think about why, who's able to discover those things? Well, people with money, because they have more money to spend on investigators, right? Some guy that wants to start a business, he doesn't have the kind of resources to figure that stuff out, nor does he have the resources to use the lawyers to fight the system in order to get the license. So these restrictions like this licensing, I mean, they have licensing in New York, they have taxes on marijuana,
yeah,
but it's so onerous that the illegal market is still bigger.
Well, the taxes market on the medical stuff is not onerous at all.
Well, that's medical, right? You got to have your... I mean, in order to get the medical stuff, you have to go to a licensed doctor.
You know what else, though? I don't know what it's like in New York, but here, if you get the nod to be able to get the medical stuff, it's not like if Hal walks in and wants a... You know, he's going a little squirrely and you need something to keep your brain together, or if you got high blood pressure medication. They give you monthly stuff. They give you 30 tablets, right? You don't get the ability to buy all the stuff you want and sell it to other people. If you get the letter saying you can buy marijuana for your bad hip or something, you can buy out the store.
Yeah.
There's no such thing that says, the doctor goes, well, you take one of these one joint a day is good for you. You could buy 100 of them. Isn't that crazy?
Smoke up, Johnny.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
That's from Breakfast Club.
Well, and now, you know, you've got, they're talking about young people, they're not drinking as much. Well, how could they be? Everybody's chewing on a gummy.
Yeah.
I mean, I walked down the block.
They're eating a brownie. You know, my buddy in the Navy. Actually,
next time you're in Chicago, walk out the door to our office and walk across the expressway. If 3 days a week you don't get half high going across the expressway, how could they be in the bar? They're all smoking.
Well, that's one thing I don't like. That's one thing I like living away from New York, man. Everywhere you walk in New York, there's pot, and I hate the smell of pot. I can't stand. I grew up with smokers, cigarette smokers, and I'd rather smell a cigarette smoke than pot. I just can't stand it. I don't know what it is, but well, I just can't stand it.
My buddies in college were really into it, right? But it was really not very strong stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't mind the smell of that.
Well, this pot is nothing like it was in the 60s.
Well, I mean, this stuff smells like a skunk walked by. I mean, it's really strong.
Well, there's probably, I don't know, 1,000 different varieties now, right?
Well, one of my buddies owns a place. There's a huge catalog.
Yeah. Yeah,
they all have thousands. Names and stuff. It's like, so what, economically, why did we, I mean, we had this huge comeback. For those that, Saudi said that they were going to increase their oil production. Okay, now you got to be careful because you can't say, well, what good does that do? Because Saudi's got to go through the Strait of Hormuz. Actually, about a third of their stuff.
Do they have to go through the Strait of Hormuz?
They have about a third of their stuff.
They have ports outside.
They have a pipeline that goes across Saudi from the Gulf to the Red Sea. So they also have an embarkation terminal in the Red Sea. So they can shift oil from the Gulf over to the Red Sea. So they can actually move some from there and increase over there. It's a million or two barrels a day. But it's not...
Well, I heard that it's not really the Iranians shutting down the Strait of Hormuz. It's that Lloyd's of London isn't issuing any insurance as of right now.
Well, duh.
Yeah.
And now Trump says he's going to insure them without any thought whatsoever to how much it's going to cost or who's going to do it.
That turns out... I mean, if we start insuring oil tankers, that's going to be like flood insurance over the next 50
years.
Yeah,
well, and then...
We'll never get out of that business.
Well, then we're going to escort them with...
You know, we'll be issuing tanker insurance for the next 50 years.
Well, from what I was on YouTube, and I was a British guy, because once in a while you have to get people out of this country if you want to hear any story. The guy was talking about the actual... the Strait and the Persian Gulf. And you listen to stuff all day long, and you never really hear any detail. And this guy goes,
you got the people on the left talking, you know, spitting out their talking points. They don't change. And then you got the people on the right.
Yeah.
And where's the news? Where are the facts?
Well, this was fascinating because
if you watch only left-leaning news, you get the news one way. If you watch only right-leaning
news, you should know that you were in the Red Sea, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was in the Red Sea.
Okay.
And Persian Gulf.
Well, evidently, the Persian Gulf, if you look on a map, it looks like ocean, but it's not.
No, it's not.
Evidently, let's see if I can remember this. The guy said the strait is, I don't know if it was miles or kilometers. If you're heading south, there's a 3 kilometer or 3 mile channel that you use going south. There's one after another. If you're going north, there's 3 kilometers or miles. And in the middle, there's a 5 mile buffer that nobody can be in. So, but he says the problem is if you're over a certain amount of draft, the Persian Gulf is not very deep. It's not like an open ocean. I did not know that, so I read this. He goes, the deepest part is the part by right next to Iran. You can't just head out the other side and scoot up the Saudi side because that's shallow. So if you got a big enough tanker, you're essentially within shooting range of the Iranian shore the whole way up.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not just get somebody through the straits and they're good to go. You're actually the entire 100 miles up. You're right by Iran. You know, it's almost like you never really leave the strait.
Yeah.
But I did not know that. But if you're a big enough ship.
Well, if you ever in the Persian Gulf, one thing you don't want to do is swim in it. It doesn't look like it's very hospitable. I knew Navy guys that were fishing off the pier in the Persian Gulf, and I'm like thinking, I don't think I want to eat 3-eyed fish.
Well, I mean, he was saying that there's spots in the middle that are only 25 feet deep.
Yeah.
30 feet deep, which I just thought once you saw blue water, you just went. But evidently
well, I think the Persian Gulf, if I'm not correct, I think I read this one. It's like the Great Lakes. I think it was the remnant of a glacier that carved it out, right?
That I don't know. I mean, it's all salt water, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't, but
I just looked up and there's four ports in the Red Sea and there's only three in the Persian Gulf that Saudi has. And we went to one of them called Jeddah.
Yeah.
Jeddah was a pretty interesting place because they had American compound. And when a Navy ship visits Jeddah...
You were never in the Gulf, right? You were in the Red Sea?
I was in the Red Sea and the Gulf, yeah.
Oh, really? But did you realize the Gulf was shallower?
I was always underneath the waterline. You know, the nuclear power plant...
So if they had to run aground, they'd have run you aground.
The only time I got to see the sunlight while we were underway is, like, between watches in the afternoon after the workday. And I'd every once in a while go up to the smoke deck because the smokers would always get a 10-minute smoke break no matter what. I'd go up to the smoke deck and stand up there and I'd look out and all I could see is tan for the sand and then a kind of a gray for the water, and that's all you saw. So there was no reason.
What was the draft of your dinghy?
What's that?
What was the draft of your boat?
The draft.
How deep did it go in the water?
Oh, I don't know, maybe 5-6 feet. I don't know.
You were on a cruiser?
I was on a cruiser, yeah.
You had to be pushing 30, but you weren't 35 or 40.
Honestly, I don't know, because all I knew was the nuclear reactor, our steam engine, and the reactor auxiliaries equipment. That's all I really knew. That's all I really cared about. I just did my job.
Well, my buddy
Hank, he could identify airplanes. He was a nuke, but he could identify airplanes from the flight deck. He'd go, hey,
what was your ship's reason for being? What kind of guns did you have on it?
We had a 4-inch gun. It was like a mini destroyer. We had
I thought you were a big cruiser.
No, we were a little we were a pretty small cruiser. We're only 500 feet long.
All right, so you didn't have big. Did you have any missiles or torpedoes or anything like that?
I think we had a missile launcher on the front. It had we had a missile launcher. We had a 4-inch gun. And then we had Phalanx, which
Gatling gun kind of thing? Okay.
Yeah, Gatling gun, basically. Automated Gatling gun, yeah. Basically, what we were is we were the target. If somebody's going to go after an aircraft carrier group, we were the sacrificial anode.
You were the, what do they call it? The
We were the zinc alloy inside the condenser. We were supposed to rust before the condenser.
You were the picket fence.
Yeah, we were.
Oh God, SP Futures down 30.
There's not much we could do. We had to stay in the carrier group. Let's just say that.
SP Futures down 31. NASDAQ Futures down 95. We've been kind of wandering back and forth here. Actually, we were up when he came in, so now we've turned the other way. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now. Hello,
welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. SP Futures down on 27. NASDAQ Futures down 79. We were up when we came in. We were down last night. Up when we came in. Every little real utterance out of Washington is because now we have the XF saying this could be the most intense day of the war. So instead of last night, it was almost over. Now today, it's the most intense day. So whatever you choose to believe, it's kind of pretty scary what is all out and about. We have over in Europe. Let's see what we have. We go. I'm a little slow. My machines, I hear, are slower. Ricky, why don't you traffic, weather, sports, and I'll.
Absolutely. Good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:32 here in Chicago. We're looking at 58 degrees right now with a high of 58. Some sun in the morning, then turning cloudy with a couple of showers this afternoon. Severe weather expected tonight. The storms can bring flooding and large hail, so there's a possible threat for tornadoes as well, and a low of 38 degrees. So make sure to be alert and have a way to receive warnings. Phoenix, Arizona, 61 degrees right now with a high of 79. A couple of showers this morning, otherwise partial sunshine, and tonight will be clear with a low of 57 degrees. Now, traffic in Chicago. Chicago. There's an accident westbound on Kennedy at Division Street, exit 49A. Two right lanes closed, so expect some delays on that. On Eisenhower, heavy traffic starts at First Avenue. And also, we have inbound Stevenson from Turning Port. We got about 45 minutes. Other than that, we're looking pretty clear. Now, sports for the MLB spring training. Yesterday, the White Sox beat Rockies 12-3, and Diamondbacks beat Mariners 2-1. Today, we got White Sox playing Athletics, Diamondbacks with Dodgers, and Cubs playing Rangers, all at 3:05 p.m. Yesterday, the Blackhawks beat Utah Mammoth 2-3. And lastly, for the NBA, Suns at Bucks today at 7 p.m. and Bulls at Warriors at 9 p.m. That's all I got for you. Back to you,
Chief. The Utah, who? What's the name of that team?
Mammoth.
The Mammoth.
The Mammoth. Yeah, Mammoth.
That's the new hockey league, right?
Yeah, yes. That's the National. Good Lord.
Yeah, we move out of Utah, and they get an NHL franchise. I can't believe it.
Well,
I could have rode the tracks, our version of the L, from our condo to that game. I can't believe that. I mean, as soon as we leave, they get a franchise.
Well, there you go.
I'd love to have gone hockey. I love hockey. Live.
Over in Europe?
I can't watch it on TV, but I can sure watch it live.
Well, you can come here and watch the Hawks. They suck. It's the highest ticket highest ticket prices in hockey are damn near. Yeah. Of course, you know.
You got a lot of hockey fans, and the demand in Chicago is high, whether the team's good or not, right?
Well, Toronto was horrible forever.
And they got a really cool set of uniforms, too. So.
Yeah, well, yeah. But Toronto, it might not, but still
although,
is.
Although, I think the Red Wings have the best uniforms in all of hockey.
Well, maybe, but I said Toronto was the hardest ticket to get in the Northern Hemisphere, even though they were horrible. Everybody wants to go see Toronto Maple Leafs play.
That makes sense because, you know, it's Canada, right?
Yeah. Say Hoser, eh?
You know, Tom, you know how they came up with the name Canada?
C-A-N-A-D-A?
They pick letters out of the hat.
We went up and we finished this real quick. Dax up 433. It's almost 2%. They were down like 3 or so the other day. So we'll see how this lands on Friday. Putsay up 133, 1.3%. Kick around up 98, 1.25. Again, these guys didn't run up as like we did on the close yesterday, so they're kind of catching up. Over in Asia, these guys have been getting hammered, but not today. Nikkei up 1,500 points. It's 2.9%. They were down almost 6 the other day. So, again, we got to reconnect where all these numbers are maybe on Friday. Hang Seng up 551, 2%. Shanghai up 26.6%. Bonds, we've got the unchanged 4.13 on the 10-year. Oil, which topped like 115 yesterday, is at 90.46, which is still pretty high. It's down another $4. But sure, nowhere near to 115. Brent down 556, 93.40. That's the reason why the market came back. Gold up $84, 51.87. Silver up 430, 88.87. So rallies there. Crypto, Bitcoin's up 1,400, 70,000, up kind of near the high of a few weeks ago. Foreign exchange, and this is what's been doing a lot of this stuff. This dollar rally, which is kind of stalled. That's why gold was going down, now why it's coming back up. Where the euro's at 116, down from the 117.5, 118 a couple weeks ago. British pound 134. That's come back some because it was over 135. Went down into the threes. Now it's in the fours. I guess that's it. We already did traffic, weather, sports. Yeah. So I don't know. I had a crazy story for you. It's just as well. The you were talking about the hockey stuff.
Yeah.
And the in Utah. I wonder who built the stadium out there for them because they've had a.
They had a stadium out there for a long time. It was called the Maverick Center and. Westminster, when I first got to Westminster, we had our graduation ceremonies there, but then budgets got tight and we just moved it on campus. But okay. Yeah, the tracks goes right to it. I mean, we live right on the tracks and we can go to the University of Utah football games. The tracks goes right by the football stadium. We can go to the airport. We can go downtown. We can go to the Real Salt Lake. You can ride the tracks to the Real Salt Lake, the soccer stadium, and then you can take the tracks to the Maverick Center where they have hockey.
Well, you know, here's a...
And then, you know, you got the... I call it the Delta Center, but wherever the Jazz play.
Well, the Chicago, I won't say it's the only one. It has to be. Nobody else could be this ignorant. We have L-tracks that go through the parking lot of the United Center.
Oh, wow.
In the old Chicago Stadium.
Well, that's... The tracks goes in along the end zone.
Okay, but right,
when you're in the car, you can actually see the, right, you're
missing
the stadium. You're like a foot away from it.
You're missing the conclusion here. There is no station there.
There's no station there.
Because these guys want people to go and park in their lots.
Yeah, well, you know, that's not the way in Utah. In Utah, if you have a football game ticket, you get on the tracks for free. They want you to ride the tracks.
It's probably, I'm going to say, three stops from downtown. and you could be there, you could leave your car downtown, you could have to train head over. They don't want that. They want everybody in their cars going over there and paying the $30 to park for the game.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, when the original
well, that should, I mean, if you're a Democrat and you say you're for the environment, that right there just tells me that you're not.
Well,
because the station should have a terminal there, a platform where you can get off at the...
No kidding.
That just tells me that these politicians who say they're pro-environment, they're just not.
They're pro-money. In other words, is...
Yeah. Any other politician on the right or left, they're pro-money. When California tells me that they're pro-environment, they're not.
They're just not.
This
stuff breaks apart.
They can care less about the environment.
One criticism I have of a few of the gentlemen on the show is when they talk about this stuff, they put a political name to the party and say that's how those people act. These people are not Democrats or Republicans. They're greedy. They're the greedy party.
No, the politicians could say, hey, look, we're going to put a station in the parking lot of the stadium because it'll improve the environment. They could do that if they wanted to, but they don't. They choose not to.
And everybody, it's not worth the fight.
Now they can't come out and say, hey, we need this regulation and this regulation because we want to include up the environment. They can't after that and say that. They can't say it.
One of our famous shows I did with Dr. J on The Score. It's probably still somewhere. It might have been here when we started doing the show here. We had this debate about the tax piece. And one of the things, I mean, we can all criticize all we want. And by the way, we do, right? I mean, that's what we do. And but if we were in charge, if they put the both of us, as they say on the South Side, in the Oval Office as co-presidents, the first thing we would have to do, I would think, is get a few people around us and say, all right, we've got 4 years. What can we accomplish in the 4 years and versus all the stuff we'd like to accomplish? In some things, you get to the point, because I saw this was on when I was on the board of the CBOE, you can't pick every fight. You pick one or two. At the end of the year, you hope you made some kind of progress, which, by the way, I never did. I'd win one or two, and it seemed like eight that got by me, we were going the other way faster than I wanted. So it was always very frustrating for me, which it would be for you too, Al. You want things to be right.
Yeah, in academia, it's the same kind of thing.
But I'm saying...
I told a colleague, we were in the Senate together, the faculty Senate at Westminster, and I go, man, you know, you're picking like too many fights. You pick four fights a semester. That's a little too much in academia. She was new to it. And I go, I pick one fight a year. And I spend a lot of capital on that. I spend a lot of personal capital on that. And then I let it go for the rest of the year. And then I'll pick another fight the following year. So, you're right.
We had a big debate about taxes. And John was all over. We should have a simple tax system. We shouldn't have this complicated tax system, blah, blah, blah. And I go, John.
Yeah, but the business schools love the complicated tax system. Business schools love it. And the accounting firms love it.
You can say that, okay.
Yeah.
But the fact
is... Well, if you simplify the tax code, what would happen to all these accounting firms?
I'm saying, but... I said, okay, John, let's simplify it. You're a big guy. You're not afraid of many people. You know, John, professional football player. I said, you got a good personality. Everybody likes you. But how about this? How about I'm going to simplify the tax code. You see, the restaurant show is in town this week. I said, by the way, every time I go to some expensive restaurant, which wasn't very often, it pisses the living hell out of me that if I pay $80 for a steak, which I don't normally do, and I don't even like steak that much, that somehow or another the knucklehead next to me, because he allegedly has a client with him, is going to get 35% off of that in his taxes. And I'm paying the whole 80 and he's paying 45 or 50. I go, in my mind, that sucks. We're eating the same steak. I said, but I want to send you, and that's part of the intricacy of the tax code. It shouldn't be that way. I mean, you shouldn't be able to write your damn dinner off, for God's sake. I said, okay, I'm going to send you to the restaurant show, and I want you to give a speech how you're going to take away that tax deduction. And if you survive, I'm going to trot your ass out to a National Football League thing, and you're going to have a speech there about how the deductibility of skyboxes and tickets is going to go away. I said, if you survive all that, we'll go have a beer tonight. they're just, you sit there and you go, it shouldn't be, but are we going to spend the first year of our of our term in the Oval Office, trying to get rid of people's, even though we know they shouldn't get a deduction for tickets when regular people don't get them. Are we going to spend our first year?
Yeah, I don't think I don't think the professional sports leagues want these deductions to go away anytime soon.
I'm saying so. I mean, it's a fight that you sit there and go.
Can you imagine not getting the tax deduction on buying the box seat?
Oh God,
at the Chicago Bears Stadium.
Yeah, what do you suppose the price would go? We know the price would go down by a third.
Yeah.
Right. Because you get to take a third off, essentially.
Yeah.
So I mean, but is it a fight? Do we want to spend 4 years in the Oval Office and come out and say these two guys? They got rid of the tax deduction for wine. is that going to be our legacy?
That's what we're known for the rest of our
life. known for the rest of humanity. These guys
took away my wine deduction.
All they did was make people stop taking off a Skybox. Even though we know it's the right thing
Al-Star
to do. Yeah, L-Star.
2050.
Yeah, and he all of a sudden
the deduction away.
It's known as the SNAR rule or something. But I mean, you have to line this stuff up and say what's really important. And I'm guarantee you, nobody is going to be elected as an alderman in the city with all the crap going on and make number one on his list a station in the next to the United Center. It's just not going to happen.
I think the way you fix it all is you got to restore the republic nature of our country, the republic nature. We don't want democracy. Democracy is the reason why we have all of these little loopholes. I mean, politicians get elected to give you a loophole, to give this guy a loophole, to give that guy a loophole.
You know what, though?
We have to get rid of all that and just be a nation of laws.
The rest of
where everybody knows the rules.
But yeah,
for the next 50 years.
But when you say that, I would have loved to put you in class with George Stigler, because you and he would have been absolutely at loggerheads the whole time. And the reason is, you know, economics.
Well, that's how I am with most of my colleagues.
But you know.
But it never gets to the point where we're yelling at each other.
No, but I'm saying agree. The difference is. I'm not going to say he knows regular economics as much as you do, but he knew political economy way more than you do.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And his famous line was, one of the students says, why isn't the city run like a business? Why aren't politicians run like a business? He looked the guy right in the eye and he says, it is run like a business. You just don't understand the business. Just because you don't agree with the business doesn't mean it doesn't run like a business. It does. So, I mean, the one day I got more.
People get elected. Why? Because they're going to give you a favor. They're promising this person a favor.
But you know, the thing of it is, a lot of it is just plain. It's just plain people. You know? I mean, I knew a guy. Well, he's still alive. Real nice guy. He married one of my my best buddies in high school. He married his sister, and the guy was a lobbyist for Allied.
Your best buddy married his sister?
No, my best buddy's sister married this guy.
Oh, okay.
And he was a lobbyist for Allstate. And of course I said, okay, what is a lobbyist even doing? He has such a bad connotation to it. And he was just the nicest guy. He was a swimmer, big athletic dude. He goes, if something is in a bill and it looks like it's horrible for our industry or maybe even for you, it could be just something that is not thought out. I said, I'll go from office to office. You know, if I can get in to see a staffer or maybe even the representative, I'll say, you know, by the way, this part in this bill is really poorly written. It's going to screw us in. Oh, by the way, screw regular people. He said half the time, more than half the time, the guy doesn't even know what's in there.
Yeah.
He goes, it's a matter of education. And the guy goes, I don't really know much about your business. And you educate the guy. He goes, it's not about... It's not about me putting a pile of cash on the table and walking out. I mean, most of these guys have no idea what's in these bills. It's an education process. So
you know, the problem with that, though, is a company like Allstate has the resources to hire a guy to do that.
That's my point.
What about all these people who used to work for a manufacturer where the manufacturer went somewhere else? They don't have anybody lobbying
for
them.
I say on the show, I haven't said it in a while because all I do is get negative feedback.
Yeah.
One of the single biggest problems of the middle class right now is the demise of not the city unions, but the regular unions. Because I don't know if they wanted to or not, but the agenda of like the auto workers union and the electricians union pretty much lined up with the middle class. So they did a lot of the work in Washington for the middle class. And one of the few days that I've ever gotten really negative feedback on the show, only been a couple times, It was one day I said, you know, everybody, listeners, if you really wanted to get off your dead ass and do something about all the stuff you're always complaining about, let's find somebody to have the Stocks and Jocks regular guy lobbyist group. And everybody sends in a grand. We get 2,000 people send in $1,000 a piece. And every time somebody shoves $500 in somebody's pocket of somebody's fat ass, we shove $1,000 in the other pocket and we say that's not what we want.
Yeah.
You wouldn't believe the emails and stuff I got about, Chief, I shouldn't have to pay. These guys should know what I want. I voted for them, and none of that should have to happen. Well, that's bullshit. I mean, if you're not willing to be heard, if you're not willing to even show up and say this is what I want, how is this guy supposed to know what you're thinking, drinking a beer, watching a football game?
Well, the movie my kids and my wife and I went to last night, I shouldn't have went because I'm sick, but I went anyway. My son,
how many people did you infect?
Birthday. We went to this movie where this 19-year-old girl, college student, she's fighting the mayor, who looks a lot like Gavin Newsom. She's fighting the mayor over this...
Well, they all got the same hairdo, all those guys.
Yeah. She's fighting the mayor over this beaver pond that the mayor wants to put a highway over. And it's really interesting because it weaves in the Avatar thing where she ends up being in the body of a robot beaver and can communicate with the other animals. And it creates this massive war between animals.
God.
And, yeah, it was actually pretty good. But, you know, that's the issue is who do these guys listen to?
They're not going to listen to you if you're never there.
Yeah, they're not. Yeah, but she was always on the steps of the city hall, asking the mayor, advocating that he do something to save this, you know, beaver pond. You know, she was active, right?
Well, you know, one of the
problem with that is, you know, everyday regular people have a job and they have kids. Yeah. And it's really hard.
Well, but I'm saying
away from that.
It is important enough. For you, I mean, it's important enough for people to not just look at the two idiots that are running for president, which most of the time it seems like there are, and you got to get in the process early. You can't say, I don't like the guy running for alderman when you had 15 different occasions to help the guy you did like win the primary. I mean, it's effort. I don't want to do it either. I get that part, but, you know, it's funny, kind of a tie-in story. One morning, you know, you hear some of the weirdest stuff in the morning when you listen to radio. My mom was still alive, so it had to be, well, how long was Reagan was in office, for God's sake? So it was way before.
Wow, that was a long time ago.
I just moved north, so I'm driving south, take my mom to breakfast, and I was in my Ford Bronco. It was my 83 Ford Bronco. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, and so all of a sudden they had Schultz. He just died. He was Reagan's treasury guy, and he was Secretary of State, too, wasn't he? Didn't he have two cabinet posts?
Schultz just died?
Well, I mean, not that long ago. I mean, you know, we think
that's weird because when I was a kid,
I don't mean this year. I mean,
he was 90.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm saying, he made it.
So he died at 130.
No, but he was up there. I mean, anyway,
he looked old when I was a kid.
Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. But anyway, the guy says to him, Secretary Schultz, when you got to be Secretary of the Treasury, who gets the information? You know, like Trump shooting off his mouth and people trading before him, like I see every day. It seems. Who gets the information on, like, the labor report or those kinds of things? He goes, I assume the president gets it because he's not walking to the helicopter and he'll say, what labor report? I mean, he goes, funny you should mention that. He said, the first thing I did when I got in office, I said, where's the list of the people that get these numbers in advance? And I get this long list. He goes, I'm looking at these names. I go, why are these? This is the Secretary of Treasury talking on the air, talking about, you know, his being honest, being our current guy. And he goes, and by the way, he was Republican, so it's not a Republican thing. He goes, I looked at this list, and I said, these people have no business on this list.
Yeah.
And the guy says, well, what'd you do? I said, well, I started...
Let me ask you a question. Was Billy Ray or Lewis on it? Or the Duke of Duke?
I don't know. But he goes, I started taking people off the list. He goes, I got so much negative feedback. I was taking so much crap that I just said the hell with it and gave up. I couldn't believe... He goes, I just said the hell with it and gave up. And the guy goes... You gave up? He goes, yeah, it was the hardest thing I ever did. And, you know, it just wasn't worth it. How scary is that? That was 40 years ago, for God's sake.
Yeah.
So what do you think it's like now?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So anyway, why? I have a question.
Well, we know politicians and bureaucrats are using this information to buy stocks. We know that,
you,
right?
You would think.
Now, politicians that are beating the market for 20 years straight.
Didn't used to be able to, but now... Yeah. You never saw Adlai Stevenson
doing
that, Paul
Simon? Well,
there was a
bipartisan vote right after the Boston Marathon bombing. Right during the debate over, right, I think it was like a Monday, they did a voice vote in the Senate that killed the bill on the Stock Act. It was like 80-20, and it was a voice vote because nobody wanted their their actual votes recorded.
Well, that's so hey, what, why, Mr. Calculus Economics, why was the bulge, I just went through this with Carl earlier, why was the bulge on back when we went to Gulf War One and Two, that whole area, whole time period, we were making about producing maybe 5 million barrels a day, and I think we were importing 40-50% of our oil, maybe 35, during that entire couple of decade period, and we fought a couple of wars in the Middle East, and every time oil kind of spiked, but it never spiked as percentage as it did the last couple of days, and yet now we produce as much as we use. Why did it affect us as much as it did when we were producing 45% of what we used? Or was it just the market overreaching and now it's coming back to where it ought to be? Was it just a market blow-off?
Yeah, remember where did the Chinese get their oil from? They got it from Venezuela.
I'm talking about,
we're not getting it anymore.
I'm talking about right here in this country.
Yeah.
Believe these people, it should make no difference what happens over there. Obviously,
China was getting their oil from Venezuela and Iran. They're probably not getting it anymore. So where does China get it now? Well, now they got to buy it on the open market. So the two markets were segmented, right? They have two major suppliers to China. Maybe the third supplier to China is the world. But within that segmented market, they're being supplied by Venezuela and Iran. They're getting a pretty good discount. All of a sudden, those two supplies aren't supplying anymore. Where do they get their oil from? Well, they have to get their oil from other oil producing nations. That pushes the price up.
Okay, but I'm saying
it's a world market for the most part, right? If they don't get it from Iran and Venezuela, who are they going to get it from?
Okay, so what is our advantage?
You're going to get it from another oil.
Okay, what is our advantage in being self-sufficient if we go up just as much as when we weren't?
Well, we're not going to be self-sufficient. We're going to be a net exporter of oil, or we're going to be a net importer of oil.
Okay,
we're not going to be self-sufficient.
We're very close. We're 20...
I'm going to tell you right now, people in America, if they're not willing to pay as much as the Chinese are for a barrel of oil, they're going to sell it to China.
Why does everybody believe... Everything I've read, you know, I try and go back and research some of this stuff, which I know you're not supposed to do. This whole idea with Venezuela, China was getting some oil from Venezuela, right? China loaned those guys a bunch of money for infrastructure, for their something road project, and the deal was that...
I think it had to do with the AI that they were supplying to.
Okay, I'm saying the deal was, from what I understand, they were supposed to be getting X number of barrels of oil from Venezuela in return for this. Venezuela never gave them the amount of oil they were supposed to give them. They essentially got stiffed on half of the money they put in there.
Yeah, and they're not going to get it ever again, probably.
Okay, but I'm saying, and everybody, if you listen to people who listen to this president, everybody will tell you that somehow China was getting this massive deal in Venezuela. They got a horse bleep deal in Venezuela. They were getting half of the oil they were supposed to be getting.
But what I'm saying is they were getting some from Venezuela. Getting some from Iran. Where they get it now? Well, they have to buy it from maybe Saudi Arabia at a higher price.
Well, you know, we just gave Russia the okay to sell more oil to India. Why do we do that if we're so worried about Russia now?
Yeah, the problem I have is we're giving Russia a lot. You know, we're telling the world that they can buy from Russia now. It seems like we have a little too much power in the world. I don't like us having that kind of power.
Well, we're also, you know, telling everybody we're screwing China. We're exporting coal to them.
Yeah.
They use coal for energy, and we're exporting to them. Not that much. It's only like 10%, less than 10%. But we are exporting to China almost all their metallurgical coal. Yeah. What is the difference between regular coal and metallurgical coal?
Yeah, I don't know. Metallurgical coal probably has flakes of metals in it that is not very good for the environment when it's burned. I don't know.
But that's what you use to make steel.
Yeah.
Because whatever's in the coal makes the steel, the iron, stronger. I don't know what. But you get that out of West Virginia. The stuff in Illinois, you can just burn, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I remember the day when my cousin Aaron, living in my uncle Bob's house with his young family before they got divorced, I remember the coal truck used to show up. This was like 2000. It was an old house. And they would dump coal in a room in the basement, and he would have to shovel coal into the burner to keep the house warm. I mean, it was a low rent, but it wasn't central air.
My aunt and my grandfather both had coal fired.
This was 2000, right? This is about 2000.
Well, you know, the progression was you had this big, huge coal furnace, right?
Yeah.
And then what people would do, they'd say, okay, get rid of the coal. They would just put grates in there and put an oil tank down there and use oil. Yeah. Matter of fact,
stove oil.
Matter of fact, most of the schools I was in had been coal burning. I had a couple actually went that were coal burning, which was scary. You know, those didn't have any electricity. You know, they were high steam boilers, and if there was steam coming out of it, you put your hand up there, you cut your hand off. I mean, it was But I mean, it was the pumps were all driven by the steam, and as the years went on, if some pump conked out, they would put an electric pump in there, and then another electric pump, and finally they would say, all right, we get on the low pressure steam, because you don't need high pressure to heat the place. You need high pressure to move the pumps.
The steam that heats a place, you only need about 2 or 3 pounds.
Yeah. So then they said, okay, we're not going to have coal in these places. They would put a whole bunch of oil grates in the same huge coal-fired furnace, and they would just burn oil instead of coal in the same thing. But it was way inefficient. Mm. I mean, it was then they would go to a natural gas.
Well, it was probably allowed to continue because at the time, probably coal was very inexpensive. Why my in-laws to this day still have these massive radiators in their Brooklyn home, because they were probably installed right after the Spanish flu of 1917.
That's the world's greatest heat, radiator heat. It's so even, it's quiet, it's nice. But I was there when they did some of these.
Yeah, steam is, my in-laws, if you get it balanced right and all the radiators get hit with steam at the same time, it's a very soothing heat.
Well, none of the stuff here, most apartment buildings here were steam, but houses were all hot water.
Yeah.
You know, you don't even have to have a pump if the house is above you, which is the hot water rises and it just flows on its own.
Yeah, well, in my mother-in-law's house, my father-in-law, mother-in-law's house in Brooklyn, the steam fills the radiators, pushes air out of the vents. The vents close when the steam hits it.
The steam.
And then the radiator gets nice and warm, and when the thermostat turns off the flame, all that steam condenses, forms a vacuum, pulls the air back into it, and all that condensed or sleepy steam, as Holman in Sand Pebbles, the movie Sand Pebbles, played by Steve McQueen, all that sleepy steam goes back to the boiler, fills it back up.
Well,
no pumps, nothing.
But your steam system is a one pipe system.
It's a one pipe system.
Your hot water heater. Hey, all right. So we've got the Treasury Secretary saying he's going to have to borrow a lot more money. Is he going to be able to? We're talking $1 trillion every 44 days.
It's crazy.
Are we, the U.S. of A, going to be able to borrow that easily? I think the answer is no.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess the Fed prints it. I don't know.
Well, or they don't look like they're going to tax
before it. Before the war, I was tracking the yields, and they were headed straight down. But then post-war, they're headed straight up.
I'm going to guess that
I suspect after this is done, they're going to head back down, and I don't know why they'd be headed back down. I just don't understand why they'd be headed back down.
What do you suppose this money supply number is this month's going to show?
I was tracking it. I updated my M2 last week. I got some new numbers from the weekly M2, and I think it was like February, February 6th.
I know, but you're filling in last month.
I know, yeah.
You're filling in last month. I mean, when the February number comes out, what do you think the... What Hal's doing, here's the screwiness of this. You used to get the weekly numbers as they happened. Well, now you get the monthly number, and then they fill in the week of the month behind it, right?
Yeah. Wait a month.
So in other words, we're going to get the February monthly number, and then I was going to go back, and he can fill in the weeks in February and try and get a progression. But it's not like you're getting last Friday's number.
And they could release it. They could release it daily, or at least once a week.
Well, they used to do it once a week, and then Biden said no.
Yeah, they could release it once a week.
Why should we know? The real people know.
Yeah,
why should we?
The Fed knows what the M2 number is going to be.
Yeah, you think Goldman doesn't know it?
Yeah, they know. Yeah.
Anyway, S&P futures down 10, Nasdaq futures down 9. If this gets even crazier, I'll tap you before next week, because we're kind of all everybody's on the deck here, because we never see anything quite like this, Hal. So
yeah, it's crazy.
All right, buddy, you take care of yourself. Are you on break or are you teaching? Kevin's on break.
We returned from break, but I got sick Monday morning. My kids got sick over the weekend, and I got whatever they have. So right now I got chills, and I have to mute my mic every once in a while to cough. So.
Oh, all right. Well, get over that, bud. Like I said, SP Futures down 11, as if you're down 14. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.